Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 15th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Officials React to NRC Approval of License. Chernobyl times 1 million is our eventual future if we allow the nation's nuclear waste to be dumped on the surface in Andrews County. It's not if, but when terrorists or accidents cause a Holocaust. Midland County Commissioner Randy Prude. This article was written by Caitlin Randall. After the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued a license Monday to a company planning to store high-level waste in Andrews County, officials opposed to the project vowed to continue fighting the NRC's decision. The license authorizes interim storage partners to receive, possess, transfer, and store up to 5,000 metric tons of spent fuel and 231.3 metric tons of greater than Class C low-level radioactive waste for 40 years. ISP has said they plan to store the waste until a permanent repository is built. Midland County Commissioner Randy Prude has been vocal about his opposition to the storage site and led the commissioner's court in signing a resolution in 2017 stating their objection to nuclear waste being transported through Midland. He told the Reporter Telegram on Tuesday that he was not surprised by the NRC's decision, and he believes they made their minds up years ago to approve ISP's applications. Other states have fought to keep nuclear waste out and have won. We will keep fighting and win as well, he said in an email. Chernobyl times 1 million is our eventual future if we allow the nation's nuclear waste to be dumped on the surface in Andrews County. It's not if, but when terrorists or accidents cause a Holocaust. U.S. Congressman August Pfluger of District 11, which includes Midland and Odessa, called the NRC's decision a massive blunder. This disappointing announcement failed to consider the lack of community support for the project, a vitally important aspect of citing nuclear waste laid out by the Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future, he said in a statement. The majority of folks who live and work in this community are vehemently opposed to this waste being stored in Andrews, and not a single elected official supports this decision, he said. In fact, the NRC received over 10,000 responses to their public comment period, and the majority of them were against the site. I have been and will remain vocal in my opposition. I urge the NRC to reverse course. Texas Representative Brooks Landgraf co-authored House Bill 7, which was passed by the legislature during a special session and signed by Governor Greg Abbott last week. The bill's text bans high-level waste storage in Texas, but it's unclear if it will have any effect on decisions made by the federal government. Landgraf said in a statement Monday that the NRC would violate Texas law if the license issued to ISP results in the storage of spent nuclear fuel. I expect that the state of Texas will deploy our available resources to enforce our laws, he said. Prior to the passage of HB 7, the state of Texas had no leg to stand on if it became necessary to fight back against the Biden administration. HB 7 is our weapon against high-level waste. Abbott also directed blame toward President Biden, writing on Twitter that his administration is trying to dump highly radioactive nuclear waste in West Texas oil fields. NRC staff first recommended approving ISP's license last year before Biden took office, after the company filed the application in 2016. Texas will not become America's nuclear waste dumping ground, Abbott wrote. The Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Coalition, an Austin-based environmental group that has testified at NRC hearings, also indicated they will continue opposing the project. We do not consider this fight over, Executive Director Karen Haddon told Bloomberg. We will continue to battle these dangerous plans. This article is entitled, More Than 50 Quakes Last Week. The seismic activity in far west Texas continued last week. By Stuart Doreen. The seismic activity in far west Texas continued last week. The number of earthquakes around the city of Mentone in Loving County reached 53 in 7 days, including 4 in a 4-hour period ending around 1 p.m., according to EarthquakeTrack.com. The Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas was tasked to help locate and determine the origins of earthquakes in the state, and with helping to prevent earthquakes from occurring in the future. It's set up with TexNet Seismic Monitoring Program. On Monday, Peter Hennings, a research scientist and lecturer with the Bureau, said his analysis of TexNet's data shows the Culberson-Mentone Earthquake Zone, CMEZ, in northeast Culberson County and northwest Reeves County is currently the most active earthquake sequence in Texas. Data shows most of those quakes taking place east of the Delaware Mountains in Culberson County. Hennings added that the area west of Mentone is being closely monitored and studied by the Bureau of Economic Geology's TexNet program and the Center for Integrated Seismicity Research. The rate of earthquakes in this zone has been increasing steadily over the last 3 years, and over the last month, there have been over 40 events that had the possibility to be felt at the surface locally. Events with a magnitude of at least 2.5, Hennings wrote. He wrote that the largest event thus far in CMEZ was a 4.9 magnitude tremor in March 2020. EarthquakeTrack.com reported 244 quakes in the last month around Mentone, including at least 2 that were magnitude 4.0 or greater. That was greater than the magnitude 3.7 tremor in Midland earlier this month. Hennings added that TexNet officials are investigating whether the seismic activity is connected to wastewater disposal in the region. Given that there are few petroleum operations in the immediate vicinity of the earthquake sequence that could be causing the ruptures, we are most actively investigating if injection of waste fluids into deep strata by more distant wells may be the primary cause, Hennings wrote. Long-distance earthquake inducement by deep injection has been thoroughly documented previously, including in the DFW area, northern Oklahoma, and southern Kansas. This article is called Small Bites. Experience special menus that give back during Restaurant Week. Permian Basin Restaurant Week will benefit the West Texas Food Bank. By J.C. Lewis. Permian Basin Restaurant Week is making a comeback this September. After a year off due to COVID-19, the popular fundraiser for the West Texas Food Bank will take place at 10 area restaurants. This is the third annual event, according to a press release. From September 20th to 24th, diners can enjoy and give back at 10 local restaurants. Each restaurant will offer a special menu with 20% of the proceeds from the special menu being donated to the West Texas Food Bank. Participating restaurants include The Garlic Press, Opal's Table, 42, Venezia Restaurant, Butter, Librado, Barrel and Derrick at the Odessa Marriott, Flair Taverna, the legendary Barn Door Steakhouse, and 4110. Menus for each location will be announced soon on the Permian Basin Restaurant Week's Facebook page. Diners need to ask for and order the special Permian Basin Restaurant Week menu, which will be priced at either $35 or $45. More food news. Midland will be home to a second Black Rifle Coffee Company coffee shop, it was announced recently. The second location will be on Wadley Avenue, next to the Kent Quick convenience store at 3300 North Midkiff Road. That location is across the street from Imperial Shopping Center, which houses Murray's Deli and Nothing Bundt Cakes, along with other stores. The first Black Rifle Coffee Company location at 3500 North Big Spring Street should be finished during the middle to late October, business partner James Gripp said in an email. Fiddlesticks Farms will be serving HTO during its 14th season. The popular sweet tea will come in 5 flavors in miniature gallons. Check out every new thing about Fiddlesticks Farms here. Seance has announced its new menu for its next event on October 25th. The menu will feature eggplant tartare, organic pumpkin soup with lobster, linguine nero, octopus, sweetbread, wagyu beef, mango with curry, coconut yogurt, and compressed watermelon, and Tanqueray butterfly pea flower shot. The courses will also have wine pairings. Tickets will go on sale September 17th at seancemtx.com. Blue Sky officially opened on Friday at 3001 Loop 250 Frontage Road. Hours of operation are 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Registration for vendors and pop-ups is now open for the second annual Permian Basin Food Truck Battle. The event will take place October 15th to 16th at the Bush Tennis Center. The event will raise funds for the Midtown Soldiers Boxing Club and Bush Tennis Center. There will be 20 food trucks competing in 11 categories. Categories include Best Burger, Fries, Fried Dish, Taco, Dessert, Overall, People's Choice, Cajun Dish, Barbecue Dish, Best Birria, and Seafood. This is the local page. This article is entitled Lawyer Arrested After Allegedly Threatening TxDOT Employees by Caitlin Randall. Jeffrey Marmaduke Johnston, a Midland oil and gas attorney, was arrested last Thursday after allegedly threatening to kill TxDOT contractors who were redirecting traffic after a collision. Johnston allegedly drove around traffic cones and vehicles blocking a fatal accident on State Highway 349, according to an arrest affidavit. He then drove toward 3 TxDOT contractors who were near the barricade and told him to get out of his effing way or I will kill you, the affidavit states. Johnston told the contractors he would run them over as they attempted to stop him from driving on the section of road that was blocked off, according to the affidavit. He allegedly accelerated toward at least one of the contractors, forcing that contractor to jump out of the way to avoid being hit. The attorney also allegedly drove toward a Midland Police Department officer who was on the scene investigating the crash, the affidavit states. Johnston has been charged with 4 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and 1 count of resisting arrest. He was released from the Midland County Detention Center on bond on September 10th, according to jail records. Business records list Johnston as the president of the firm Johnston & Associates. This is the state page. This article is entitled Abbott, Texas Will Not Become Dumping Ground, by Ari Natter Bloomberg. Texas official vowed to fight a federal regulator's decision to approve plans to allow thousands of tons of highly radioactive nuclear waste to be stored in oil fields in the state. Texas will not become America's nuclear waste dumping ground, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, a Republican, said on Twitter Tuesday. Abbott last week signed into law legislation that attempts to block the project from moving forward. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued a license Monday to Orano CIS LLC and its joint venture partner J.F. Lehman & Company's Waste Control Specialist LLC to establish a repository in the heart of Texas's Permian Basin oil fields for as many as 40,000 metric tons of radioactive waste. Texas's blowback underscored the federal government's decades-long futile hunt for a permanent disposal site for spent nuclear fuel. A political logjam over the issue has stranded tons of waste on site at several dozen power plants and other sites across the country, including at two nuclear power plants in Texas. The joint venture, known as Interim Storage Partners LLC, plans to have waste shipped by rail from around the country and sealed in concrete casks where it would be stored above ground at a site about 30 miles from Andrews near the New Mexico border. Local officials once embraced the Texas project as an economic boon, but it now faces stiff opposition from the local community, the state, and oil companies that fear a leak could taint a region that produces millions of barrels of oil a day. The waste can remain radioactive for thousands or even hundreds of thousands of years. "We have opposition to this project on every level," said Karen Haddon, executive director of the Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Coalition, an Austin, Texas-based environmental group fighting the project. Texas-based environmental group said, "We do not consider this fight over. We will continue to battle these dangerous plans." The Andrews County Commissioner's Court, which functions as the county's Board of Commissioners, had previously backed the plan as a means of diversifying the area's fortunes from the boom and bust of oil cycles. But it reversed course earlier this year and voted unanimously to oppose the project. The concerns are, what if there was a leak? If there was an attack? If there was a transportation accident? County Judge Charlie Falcon said in a phone interview. It could affect our entire area, and we are a very large oil producer in the state.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 15th, 2021. Republicans fight dangerous Andrews nuke waste. Pfluger, Landgraf call for enforcement of new state law to stop nuclear Regulatory Commission Plan by OA News at OAOA.com. Congressman August Pfluger of San Angelo and State Republican Brooks Landgraf of Odessa on Tuesday protested the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Monday decision to license a high-level nuclear waste storage facility 30 miles west of Andrews near the Texas-New Mexico line, noting that Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas legislature had already expressed their strenuous opposition in a law passed September 3rd. Pfluger said, "The decision handed down by the NRC to license a new nuclear waste storage site near Andrews is a massive blunder." This disappointing announcement failed to consider the lack of community support for the project, a virtually important aspect of sitting nuclear waste laid out by the Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future, the congressman said from Washington. "The majority of folks who live and work in this community are vehemently opposed to this waste being stored near Andrews, and not a single elected official supports this decision. In fact, the NRC received over 10,000 responses during its public comment period, and the majority of them were against the site. I have been and will remain vocal in my opposition. I urge the NRC to reverse course." Landgraf said the NRC and the Biden administration will jeopardize Permian Basin oil and gas production if the site is established adjacent to the Waste Control Specialist site that since 1995 has stored low-level waste like tools, building materials, and protective clothing. I was proud to work this summer on behalf of engaged West Texans to pass a law that will help Texas push back, he said. Thanks to the passage of House Bill 7, which went into effect earlier this month, the NRC will violate Texas law if the license results in the storage or disposal of spent nuclear fuel or any other high-level radioactive waste. I filed HB 7 because West Texans had made it abundantly clear that they opposed the storage of high-level radioactive waste in our energy-producing region, Landgraf said. I expect that the state of Texas will deploy our available resources to enforce our laws. HB 7 gives us a new leg to stand on in our fight against the Biden administration and out-of-town high-level radioactive waste. The material referred to by the NRC is spent fuel rods, which remain radioactive for tens of thousands of years from nuclear power plants. The project is being pursued by Interim Storage Partners, a joint venture of Waste Control Specialist and Orano USA of Bethesda, Maryland, which is a subsidiary of the Orano Corps in the suburb of Paris, France, called Châtillon-Hauts-des-Seines. Abbott wrote a letter to the NRC last November 3rd that said the site would present a greater radiological risk than Texas is prepared to allow, and the Andrews County Commissioner's Court voted unanimously July 15th to oppose the plan. Family of Quince Reflect on First Year by Michael Bayer. Heather and Priscilla Rodriguez didn't know at first they would be having quintuplets, nor did they expect all girls. On Tuesday, Heather and her daughters reunited with the nurses at Odessa Regional Medical Center to celebrate the girls' first birthday. "This first year for us has been a whole bunch of emotions," Heather said. "It's been sad because when they were first born, we didn't know what would happen, and then it's turned to nothing but joy with them. They've grown, and it's turned into crazy sleepless nights. It's been amazing. Life has been crazy busy." The two mothers and their kids reside in Crane. The quintuplets, named Hadley, Zariah, Joycelyn, Zilla, and Reagan Rodriguez, were born on August 13th at ORMC, but their birthday celebration was pushed back a month due to illness in the family. In addition to the quintuplets, the family also has a 4-year-old daughter named Sawyer Rodriguez, totaling 6 kids in their household. "Sawyer has been amazing as a big sister," Heather said. "These are not our babies. They're her babies, and she will tell you that. She is very protective over them. She helps take care of them. She is very helpful." One of the challenges from this past year has been getting all the kids to sleep through the night. "There are some who like to wake up throughout the night," Heather said. "There's no sleeping through the night. Hopefully, as they figure it out, we can start sleeping through the night very soon." When asked how much sleep she and Priscilla get on an average basis, Heather said it depends on how the babies feel. We will get about maybe 4 hours, and then it's hit or miss as they decide when to wake up because they are all early risers, Heather said. They think 6 a.m. is the perfect time to wake up. Trying to make it all work, Heather says that she and Priscilla have a system set up at home as far as responsibilities go in taking care of the kids. The big thing we have figured out, which has been amazing, is that my wife takes the late night shift for everyone, Heather said. She'll feed them and everything, which allows me to get some sleep. Then she goes to bed, and I take the early stuff because she has work. It's worked out that way for a while. During the pregnancy, Heather and Priscilla thought they were having 4 babies. It wasn't long before they found out that they would be having quintuplets. It was very surprising that there were 5, Heather said. That was a surprise. We're still adjusting to being told there would be 4 and then 5. Heather and Priscilla's mode of transportation has changed since having quintuplets. At first, they had 2 separate vehicles. However, it wasn't long before they realized they would need to get a big van. Initially, when we found out there were this many babies, we were thinking we could do 2 cars, Heather said. We didn't want a big van. We thought we were too cool for that. Then we went for one of their doctor's appointment and realized that we couldn't do 2 cars. It wasn't going to happen. It wasn't until March when they finally decided to get a big van. I love that thing, Heather said. It's something I didn't know I wanted, but I'm so glad I have it. Each baby has her own different type of character, which makes it easier for the 2 mothers to tell each of them apart. Heather also said that each of the quintuplets look different. They have different features, Heather said. I know that was a big concern of ours when they were born and how we were going to tell them apart. It took a couple of weeks to get to that point, but now they're very different. They sound very different when they cry. Some people still have trouble telling them apart. Taking the kids out in public can be a little complex for Heather and Priscilla. Getting out is crazy, Heather said. When we go to the doctor, that's an interesting experience. We get the, oh my gosh, there are 5, reaction. But when they get the shots, they're all in one room. It's crazy when they get their shot and they let you know they don't like it. Heather says all the babies sleep in one big room at their house, adding that it's easier to feed them and that they're all next to each other that way. Heather and Priscilla were very thankful for the staff at ORMC, including the doctors and nurses, for their help during and after the delivery. Everything went very smoothly. Registered nurse at ORMC, Pete Molina, said, "The babies did great. We were well-staffed and prepared. Everyone was proud to be part of this. Everything was an honor and helping raise them before they were ready to go home." There were no major health issues when the quintuplets were born. "For the most part, everyone has been pretty healthy," Heather said. "We've been pretty lucky that we haven't had issues with them. We did have COVID last month, but we didn't have it as bad as others. One of the challenges now is that the babies are starting to move and crawl," Heather said. "We're trying to get things blocked off so they can have their own area to do that. We've got one of them, Soraya, who's trying to stand up, so it won't be long before they start to walk. That's going to be challenging. I guess the other part is that they don't want to sleep through the night. Hopefully we can get them to do that. We have 3 of them that are pretty consistent and the other 2 that are guaranteed to wake up at 2 and 4 a.m. Regardless, Heather said she and Priscilla wouldn't trade their family life for anything. Family is amazing, Heather said. Enjoy the times you have with them. Soak it up while you can. OC Board holds tax hearing on higher rate. By OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa College Board of Trustees held a public hearing Tuesday on their proposed higher 2021 tax rate. The rate will be voted on during the board's next regular meeting at 6:30 p.m. September 27th in the Zant Room of the Salisbury Campus Center. No one from the public attended Tuesday's hearing. The proposed rate is 0.201723 per $100 valuation, and the 2020 rate was 0.188965 per $100 valuation. The rate that would have triggered an election is 0.214653 per $100 valuation, and the rate needed to bring in the same tax revenue as last year is 0.197289. It is now called the No New Revenue Tax Rate. The total budget for this year is $74,588,865, which includes $53,223,726 in unrestricted funds and $21,365,139 in restricted funds. Quick Hits Job Seekers Workshop. Job Seekers Workshop, led by HR professionals, have been scheduled as follows at Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane. Today, 7 p.m., Reaching Out Networking. September 22nd, 7 p.m., Best Foot Forward, Interviewing. Sign up at https://bit.ly/jobseeker-signup. Two exhibits. The Ellen Noel Art Museum will celebrate two exhibitions at 6 p.m. Thursday. Visitors will be able to view works from both Audubon's Quadrupeds, his last project, on loan from the Lee Silliman Engraving Collection, and Finding Alice, an illustrated look at Alice's adventure in Wonderland, music by Funky Pocket. Vaquero Breakfast. Hispanic Heritage of Odessa has scheduled a Vaquero Breakfast as part of Celebrando la Cultura, Hispanic Heritage Month, at 7:30 a.m. today at Dos Amigos Restaurant, 4700 North Golder Avenue. The program will include the unveiling of a billboard, Nuestro Futuro Punto, which will be displayed at 2760 Andrews Highway, and presentation by Scott Murray, and Permian and OHS players will help with the kickoff. To RSVP or for more information, call Carol Uranga at 432-349-9840. El Grito de Dolores. Hispanic Heritage of Odessa has scheduled El Grito de Dolores as part of the Celebrando la Cultura Hispanic Heritage Month at 6 p.m. today at La Margarita Festival Grounds, 1257 West Monahan Street. There will be entertainment for Lorico, mariachi, food, raffles, and more. Cook-off Fundraiser. The Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center has scheduled the Great American Steakout at 6 p.m. September 30th at La Hacienda, 12610 Texas 191 Frontage in Midland. Top grillers are invited to the Top Grill program, The Best of the Best. The event will benefit the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center. General admission and private tables are available for purchase. UTPB BSN Program. The University of Texas Permian Basin's College of Health Sciences and Human Performances is accepting applications for spring 2022 admission into the School of Nursing's Bachelor of Science program. Deadline for completed application submission is October 1st. More information about the admission criteria, application reference forms, and prerequisite checklist can be found on the UTPB School of Nursing website. Whataburger, H-E-B, join Rockhounds to honor Food Bank Partners by OA News at OAOA.com. The West Texas Food Bank is excited to have the support of the Midland Rockhounds as they wind up their regular season with a special Hunger Action Month game at 7 p.m. Friday at Momentum Bank Park, 5514 Champions Drive. The AGB check presented is expected to take place at 9 p.m. Spectators are invited to wear orange, which is the color of hunger, and cheer on the Rockhounds and the West Texas Food Bank team alongside their partner agencies, who are the front lines for distributing food in the 19 counties the West Texas Food Bank serves. HEB will be on hand to present a check on behalf of the community who were invited to give at the HEB registers, and Whataburger will be out spreading the orange love as they cheer on their partnership with the West Texas Food Bank to promote feeding student success. Harmony offering online option in Odessa by OA News at OAOA.com. Harmony Public Schools announced to parents this week that it will offer full virtual learning to eligible students beginning October 4th. The announcement was the result of the signing of Senate Bill 15 last week by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, which provided funding for Texas public schools wishing to offer online learning during the 2021-22 school year. Under the law, public schools can enroll up to 10% of their student body in online learning to be eligible to participate and remain in virtual learning. Students must meet all of the following criteria, according to a news release. Students must have passed the most recent STAR exam, if applicable, to grade level. If student did not take STAR, NWEA grade level proficiency is required. And students must have earned a C grade or higher in foundation curriculum courses taken virtually or remotely in the previous school year, for example, math and reading. Students must have no more than 10 unexcused absences during the previous school year and maintain less than 10 unexcused absences in a 6-month period. Harmony also will continue to offer its remote conferencing option on an as-needed basis for students who remain on campus, but may need to learn from home on a short-term basis. Under this program, students can learn from home for up to 20 instructional days if they have pre-existing medical condition or are forced to quarantine due to positive COVID-19 diagnosis or exposure. Additional days may be granted upon TEA approval with required Documentation. National Merit semifinalists include Odessa High School student by OA News at OAOA.com. Evanston, Illinois. Officials of National Merit Scholarship Corporation on Tuesday announced the names of approximately 16,000 semifinalists in the 67th Annual National Merit Scholarship Program. One of the semifinalists is Odessa High School student Akasha Mukera. These academically talented high school seniors have an opportunity to continue in the competition for some 7,500 National Merit Scholarships worth nearly $30 million that will be offered next spring. To be considered for a Merit Scholarship Award, semifinalists must fulfill several requirements to advance to the finalist level of the competition, a news release said. About 95% of the semifinalists are expected to attain finalist standing, and approximately half of this finalist will win a National Merit Scholarship, earning the Merit Scholar title. NMSC, a nonprofit organization that operates without government assistance, was established in 1955 specifically to conduct the annual National Merit Scholarship Program. Local News Roundup. Man charged with sexually assaulting girl. A girl reportedly told the Odessa Police Department that she was sexually assaulted numerous times from the time she was 9 years old to 14 years old by a known person. Carl Adkin, 40, was charged with sex abuse of a child, continuous victim under 14, a first-degree felony. The girl was given a pseudonym, K.S., reported the sexual abuse to the police on August 24th, an OPD probable cause affidavit detailed. K.S. reportedly told OPD the sexual abuse started when she was 9 years old and it concluded at 14 years old. K.S. stated that Adkin took advantage of the fact that her mother was hospitalized. K.S. also stated she was sexually assaulted in her mother's room, the affidavit stated. K.S. continued to detail the sexual assaults continued numerous times even after her mother was released from the hospital. The SANE exam was reportedly administered to K.S. and it indicated trauma. Adkin was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on September 11th, and he has one bond totaling $100,000, jail records show. He was still in custody as of Tuesday morning. Woman charged with running over Music City Mall security guards. A 43-year-old woman was arrested after she reportedly hit two mall security guards and ran over one of their arms with her vehicle. Shanika Ayana Jackson was charged with two counts of aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony. The reported robbery happened at 3:45 p.m. September 10th in the Dillard's parking lot of the Music City Mall, located at 4101 East 42nd Street, an Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed. Officers reportedly made contact with two Music City Mall security officers who were identified as Eduardo Herrera and Isaiah Lujan, and an Ector County Sheriff's Office deputy, Eric Deanda. Deanda stated that a woman later identified as Jackson concealed merchandise in a white bag while inside Dillard's passed all points of sale, and exited the south doors of Dillard's without making any attempt to pay for the concealed merchandise, the affidavit stated. Deanda reportedly contacted Jackson in the parking lot to detain her, but she was able to enter the driver's seat of a black Lincoln Navigator. Deanda continued to detail prior to committing the theft, Jackson filled out a credit application using the name Shanika, and he recalled overhearing her provide the address of 4400 Tanglewood Lane. OPD records show Jackson was issued a citation on a previous date in a black 2006 Lincoln Navigator with a license plate, returning to Jackson with a local list address of 4000 Tanglewood Lane, which is the Tanglewood North Apartments, the affidavit stated. After speaking with Herrera and Lujan, both reportedly told police they responded to assist Deanda with detaining Jackson at the open driver's door of the Navigator. Herrera and Lujan stated that upon their arrival, Jackson drove the Navigator in reverse, striking both Herrera and Lujan with the still open driver's car, causing both Herrera and Lujan to fall to the ground and running over Herrera's right arm with the Navigator's left front wheel. Jackson was later located by other OPD officers in the area of Tanglewood Lane and East 42nd Street, the affidavit stated. Jackson was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on September 10th. Jail records show she has two bonds totaling $150,000, and she was still in custody as of Tuesday morning.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read from the Odessa American, published Wednesday, September 15th, 2021. County proposes same tax rate. Higher appraisals will mean higher taxes. Hospitals still waiting on financial help. By Federico Martinez. Ector County commissioners are proposing to maintain the current property tax of 0.365 for fiscal year 2021-22. The decision could increase or decrease overall property tax revenues based on whether property and mineral rights are higher or lower. Judge Debbie Hayes said Tuesday. Many homeowners, however, have reported a higher appraisal this year. Commissioners are scheduled to vote on the proposed property tax rate during their September 28th meeting. We're trying to be very responsible in the budgeting process, Hayes said following the commissioners' Tuesday meeting. We don't want to be a burden on taxpayers. Hayes said it's difficult to estimate how much property tax revenue will be collected during the 2021-22 fiscal year, which begins October 1st, because property values are constantly fluctuating. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons said the county also expects sales tax revenue to increase significantly during the upcoming fiscal year, which would offset any shortfall from property taxes. Hayes said the county is predicting it will collect between $18 to $19 million in sales tax in 2021-22. That prediction is based on the $18.5 million collected in 2020, she said. The county so far this year has collected $15 million. Commissioners voted to table a proposed policy that would grant paid quarantine leave for peace officers and detention officers employed by the county. Commissioners debated the issue for several minutes before agreeing that more information was needed before a vote was taken. Simmons expressed concern over what steps would be implemented to make sure the policy isn't abused. For example, Simmons said he didn't want employees coming in every 2 weeks and saying they are infected with COVID. He also was concerned that if you have an outbreak in jail, you can't just shut down the entire jail. Hayes and several county administrators said it was their belief that the proposed policy would apply to only those employees who tested positive and not to anyone who just claimed they might have COVID or any other infectious disease. In addition to paying an employee's salary while infected, the proposed policy would also require the county to pick up the tab for employees that have to be quarantined. Several county commissioners wanted to know where the county would get the money to pay for such a policy. County administrators were directed to study the issue further and return with more details at a later date. Following Tuesday's meeting, Simmons said commissioners have not yet discussed when or if they will consider a request by Medical Center Hospital for American Recovery Plan Act funds granted to the county. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin has said funds are needed to help them hire more nursing staff to care for COVID-19 patients. Tippin said Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown have said their hospitals are both struggling with the severe nursing shortage at a time when COVID numbers have increased locally. MCH has asked Odessa City Council for $4 million in ARPA funds, and ORMC has asked for $2,592,000.
Obituaries. Peggy Janine Jeannie Wright Owen. Andrews. Peggy Jeannie Owens, 86, of Santa Maria, California, passed away on Wednesday, September 8th, at Marion Regional Medical Center, Santa Maria. Family and friends will gather to celebrate her life 10 a.m. Friday, September 17th, at Magnet Funeral Home Chapel in Andrews, Texas. Interment will follow in the Andrews North Cemetery. The family will receive friends from 5 to 9 p.m. on Thursday at the funeral home. Jeannie was born September 17, 1934, in Murray, Texas, to Charlie Wright and Mammy Allen Wright. She is preceded in death by three wonderful husbands, Buster S. Hahn, Richard A. Schaffer, and Raymond E. Owens. Parents Charlie and Mammy Wright, sisters Brenda Sue Wright and Charlie M. Brown, and brothers John A. Wright and Ray Wright, and her beloved fur bay Grismo. She is survived by her daughter Juanita Dyer and fiancé Joe Hester of Santa Maria, California, three grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, one sister Linda Hufford, and husband Herrera of Graham, Texas, and numerous nieces and nephews. Sandra Prieto, Odessa. Sandra Prieto, 41, passed away on September 1, 2021, at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, Texas. Sandra was born March 16, 1980, in Odessa, Texas, to Manuel and Rebecca Prieto. She is preceded in death by numerous family members and most recently her mother and brother-in-law. Sandra is survived by her daughter, Grisel Martinez of Odessa, father Manuel Prieto of Odessa, sister Roxanne Vasquez of Odessa. Visitation is scheduled for Wednesday, September 15th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a prayer service at 7 p.m. at Martinez Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held at Crescent Park Baptist Church in Odessa on Thursday, September 16th at 10 a.m. with burial following at Ector County Cemetery. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Martinez Funeral Home. Death notices. Donald Wayne Ferris, Odessa. Donald Wayne Ferris, 95, of Odessa, died Thursday, September 9th in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 16th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home. Joy Deanne White Miller, Odessa. Joy Deanne Miller, 54, of Odessa, died Friday, September 10, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. September 16th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Coon Creek Cemetery in Smiths Road. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reuben A. Salazar, Odessa. Reuben A. Salazar, 65, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 8th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Thursday, September 16th at St. Elizabeth and Seton Catholic Church. Burial follows at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acre West Funeral Chapel. Maria Luisa Quintano Valenzuela, Odessa. Maria Luisa Valenzuela, 59, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 8th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 16th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Health and Wellness from the MRT for Wednesday. Wound Care is Essential to Health by Brad Robinson, Midland Health. With the current surge of COVID in our community, it is important to remember that now more than ever, caring for chronic wounds is very important to your overall health. Amputations among patients with chronic wounds increased 50% in 2020 over the previous year. If you have a wound that will not heal on your legs or feet, please seek medical attention as soon as possible. The Wound Management Center at Midland Memorial is here to help. You do not need a referral with most insurance plans, and we see most new patients within 2 to 4 days of them reaching out for an appointment. There are multiple risk factors that can lead to a wound that will not heal, such as diabetes, type 1 or 2, peripheral artery disease, peripheral vascular disease, high blood pressure, smoking, high cholesterol, or a family history of most of these. September is PAD, Peripheral Artery Disease Awareness Month, and the staff at Midland Memorial Wound Management is encouraging you to take your socks off. PAD affects 8.5 million people over the age of 40 nationwide, and many of them are unaware of the disease. Look for the following signs. Leg or foot wounds that are slow to heal, 3 to 4 weeks or longer. Unexplained leg pain or cramping, especially during exercise or walking. Skin problems or discoloration on your legs and feet. Poor nail growth. For more information on PAD, go to www.heart.org/PAD. MMH Wound Management utilizes a comprehensive approach tailored for you by one of our specially trained physicians, which includes many cutting-edge medical advancements to heal your wound and put you back in your normal life as fast as possible. We utilize wound vacs, artificial skin substitutes, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, compression therapy, and debridement, just to name a few. If you have a wound that is not healing, do not wait to reach out to us today at 221-4850. Brad Robinson is Program Director at the Wound Management Center.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.